Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, I'd like to kick off the show today by talking about a question that I received from a fan in our Insider Inbox column on the website, in which I was asked who I thought was the unsung hero of the Packers victory over the Giants. And I had to think about it for a little bit, but I ultimately settled on safety Morgan Burnett. Because the more I thought about it, with the Packers being down their top two cornerbacks, they kind of shuffled around that dime defense. Morgan had to play kind of a slot corner, dime cornerback position at times, as well as playing his usual safety roles. He was coming off of an injury. We didn't see any communication issues in the back end in a very solid defensive effort. I thought Morgan Burnett's performance maybe was a little overlooked from Sunday night.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Mike. And if you think about it, really, that's kind of been sort of the microcosm of his entire career in terms of he's someone that when he's back there, you don't really notice him doing his job because, well, he's doing his job. And he really did bring something, I thought, to that game. And, you know, they did a little bit more of their two-shell coverage. With really there wasn't so much the threat of the run there. So he was probably playing back a little bit more than usual. But when they did need to use him in that star, that whip position in the dime, he stepped in there. And that's the nice thing about Burnett, the way he is built, 6'1", 209 pounds, he can really play any position back there. And he kind of has those hybrid sort of tendencies to him. So for them to get the performance out of him and both HaHa Clinton Dix, he almost came down with an interception.
Yeah.
This close to getting that pick, his first one in over a year, but was able to come down with it. Still made a pretty big impact in that game, though.
Yeah, I think that would have been the icing on the cake maybe for that defensive performance if Burnett had been able to come down with that kind of acrobatic interception on the play down the seam. Took kind of an awkward fall. Fortunately, he was okay, at least seemed to be okay, but couldn't quite hang on to the ball. That would have really cemented that defensive showing, and perhaps the Giants don't even score a touchdown in the game if Burnett can come down with that one.
Yeah, that was kind of the thing, is that there's been some opportunities. I know the Packers are going to go into this game against the Cowboys, I think minus one right now in turnover differential. This was an opportunity. They've had their hands on a couple footballs over the last couple weeks. Just haven't been able to come down with it. They did get the forced fumble from Kyler Fackrell before the beginning of halftime.
Yep.
So that was a big play. But certainly, as I've kind of alluded to these last couple weeks, you just have to think with how active the Packers have been, how close they've been to a number of different balls in the secondary, eventually those will start to tilt their way.
Yeah, I did a little bit of look also for Insider Inbox, coincidentally, on the turnover statistics. And to reiterate, as is talked about somewhat ad nauseum, but it's because it's true how crucial turnovers are in how NFL games shake out. There are 15 teams in the NFL right now that are on the minus side in turnover ratio, including the Packers. Only three of those 15 have a winning record.
Yeah.
If you look at the top eight teams in the league in turnover ratio, all of them plus three or better for the season in turnovers, they're a collective 29-9 record. If you don't win the turnover battle, it makes it a lot harder to win football games.
Yeah, and you look at, Dallas is one of those teams that's on the good end of that right now. I think they only might have like one or two turnovers on the entire season at this point. Obviously, Prescott hasn't thrown an interception. I think Elliott has lost one fumble. But certainly, they've been protecting the football. Minnesota, who's the only undefeated team left in the NFL right now, has done a really good job of it.
Yep.
One of the things that Sam Bradford has been able to sort of replicate that Teddy Bridgewater did so well was just being smart with how they handle the football. So, yeah, when you have a defense that can take it away, and certainly that's the way that the Packers is built right now, it certainly gives you an opportunity not only to, on your end of the ball, get good field position, but also really demoralize an offense. And I think that's kind of what the Packers going into this game with looking at Prescott's numbers and where he's at, looking at how Elliott impactful he's been the first couple weeks of the season, they're going to be looking to take the ball away because that's the best way to interrupt that flow.
Yeah, for sure. And it's also a quick way to change this field position equation that the Packers are dealing with. They want to win the field position battle. They have some things to shore up on special teams, particularly in the punting game, which we talked about, but you get good field position a lot of times with turnovers, and that's a way for the Packers to start to turn that situation in their favor, is if the defense can turn the ball over.
Yeah, no question. And the thing is, too, when you look at the Packers and the way that they're built and how they've been sort of the emphasis that they've been placing on this unit this year, they have the tools to do it. And, you know, the one area we talked about, punt yesterday, being able to make more of those opportunities. Packers only have two down inside the 20 right now. Their opponents have 10, I believe. So really being able to push guys back. You look at the percentages that Ron Zook talks about all the time. Dom Capers discusses it a lot. The closer you get to that goal line, the more your percentage of scoring goes up, and certainly the Packers want to make it hard on opposing teams. And performances like Burnett and some of these guys in the secondary, if they can start turning the ball over, would go a long way in that.
Yeah, maybe we need to start asking the defensive backs if they've got a little kangaroo court thing going. You get your hands on the ball, you don't get the interception, you got to throw $100 in or something for dinner at the end of the season, because they've had their chances. But getting back quickly to Burnett, a really solid tackling effort by him, also coming off of the injury. He's a really solid form tackler, doesn't miss a whole lot of them, and I thought that was big against the Giants as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and that's the one thing the Packers have done this year. We talk about the run defense, we talk about the different areas that they're really performing well in, it comes down to tackling. And in my opinion, the 5 years I've been covering the team, this is the best tackling unit I've seen so far. I mean, they don't have a lot of misses so far.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, more to talk about with the Cowboys-Packers matchup coming up. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, taking a look at that Dallas Cowboys defense. Statistically, there's a couple of oddities that I discovered, mainly with their defense against the run. I know we're going to be talking a lot and already have talked a lot about the Packers' run defense. The Cowboys against the run are ranked 11th in the league, allowing only 95 rushing yards per game. But they are 29th in yards per carry, 4.6 average they're giving up yards per carry. So a real disparity there in terms of two different rankings against rushing offenses. So what do you make of that?
You know, that's a tough one. I mean, you think about it, usually those things go hand in hand. And I know there will occasionally be some anomalies with that sort of thing, but one thing it definitely tells you is that teams aren't really committing to running the ball against them, even though evidently they're having some success. So I don't know if that... You know, it's not like they're really getting in that many shootouts either, where it's like they have to, you know, they're playing from behind and are trying to close the gap. So it is really interesting. And again, as I've always said, Spoff stats and info, you can't go wrong with those things. There's always something interesting to be found. But
it doesn't mean I can always figure them out, though.
but it is one of those things. You know, Rod Marinelli, the way they built that defense, I know in the years past, I don't want to say they weren't talented, because they were, but it just, I don't think they had the plethora of talent as maybe some of the other teams in the league, but it seems like he always made the most of it.
That guy's a heck of a defensive line coach.
He certainly is, and they were able to really stand up well to what teams threw at them, particularly in the run game. But that's one that really stumps me. I don't know if you have any theories at all, but that's definitely odd.
Yeah, well, I took a quick look at, you know, the Cowboys' schedule, their ledger for this season, and the one thing I remember just from bits and pieces of games, I mean, their game against the Bears, they were ahead by quite a bit, so I don't really remember the Bears trying to run the ball a whole heck of a lot. And then this past weekend against Cincinnati, they jumped all over the Bengals. I think they were up 28-0 or something like that. So I don't think the Bengals necessarily could stay committed to the run as well. So the point you made earlier that maybe teams are getting away from the run a little bit too much against them, when that 4.6 yards per carry maybe does show a little bit of vulnerability there that I'm sure the Packers are studying it on film and seeing Eddie Lacy, James Starks, what can they do on the ground on Sunday afternoon?
Right, and obviously at this point in time at which we're taping, we don't know the exact situation with Lacy and what his availability is going to be for the week. But if I'm the Packers and if Lacy can get on the field, those are numbers that kind of have me salivating, because it doesn't really matter how many yards per game a team's giving up. If they're averaging 4.5 yards per carry, that's something that lends itself to Lacy, because that tells you, well, maybe there's a couple huge 80-yard plays in there.
Yeah.
Lacy's more of just a grinder in terms of wearing you down after down. And the Packers have shown, particularly these last 2 weeks now, they're willing to commit to the run and being able to establish him early. And, you know, if he doesn't leave that game, against the Giants, I would have been really curious to see what Eddie Lacy finished with, because by the time halftime came around, I thought he was just warming up.
Yeah, I thought so too. I think Lacy was on his way to a 120, 130-yard game against the Giants if he doesn't get injured. You do the math on 4.5 yards per carry. If you get 30 rushing attempts in a game, you know, that's 135 rushing yards if that yards per carry maintains itself. So we'll see. The other thing I thought that stood out about statistically about the Cowboys defense, where the Packers might be able to take advantage, only 10 sacks by the Cowboys defense in five games. 2 sacks per game does not go a long way in terms of pressuring the quarterback and making things difficult, particularly for a quarterback like Rodgers. We saw how the offensive line protected him very, very well against the Giants. There were a handful of plays where he had a lot of time back in the pocket. Didn't always find somebody open. Sometimes he did, and the pass was dropped. There were a few drops in there. But if the Cowboys can't get after Rodgers and if their pass rush doesn't improve, I think that's an area the Packers can take advantage of as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. And that actually has been something that sort of transcended these seasons for the Cowboys. I mean, last year they did get Greg Hardy in an attempt to try improving that area. You know, you talk about Gregory. In one of the reasons why they drafted him.
Right.
Well, neither of those guys are available right now. Hardy's not even in the league anymore. So it shows you, again, of kind of the dearth of pass rushers that they have right now and trying to establish that early on. You know, the thing about Marinelli, if I remember his defense correctly, he's not the kind of guy that's going to send seven guys at you a lot, six or seven. You know, he's going to try to do it with four. And maybe that's a byproduct of that early on.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about this Packers-Cowboys matchup after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, let's take a look at what the Packers have coming up from a scheduling standpoint. 2 games in 5 days. Cowboys on Sunday afternoon, followed by the Chicago Bears on Thursday night. Now, with the new Thursday night kind of regularity thing across the league, just about every team has to deal with this at some point, playing 2 games in a span of 5 days. Packers have the advantage this particular year in that both of the games are at home. There's no travel involved, right, either on the front end or the back end. But certainly with the Packers, their experience with Thanksgiving games over the years, playing in Detroit on Thursdays and whatnot, this 2 games in 5 days thing is nothing new to them.
No, it isn't. And it's something I think everybody in the NFL has to do at least once a season. And certainly when you look at the Packers, their history, I thought Mike McCarthy's had a really smart game plan for how they've handled these things. It's not a normal week. We remember hearing players in the past talk about it in terms of how quick that turnaround is, the fact that normally in a traditional week, your body really doesn't get back to feeling good until Wednesday, sometimes Thursdays. So they have to handle things differently. It's a challenge. It's something that certainly, you know, since this has been instituted over the last number of years, you have to overcome. There's some exciting aspects to it too, though, from the standpoint of if you can get this win against the Cowboys, that'd be a big boost going into the Bears. And then suddenly you have that, as we always term, mini bye. Getting ready for that following week game in Atlanta. So challenges come with it. It's part of the territory. Everybody understands it, and you just got to do your best to push through. But this is going to be one of the biggest difficult stretches of the Packers' schedule.
Yeah, the players have the challenge from the physical recovery standpoint, and also then just processing that new game plan, all that mental preparation,
right, yeah,
so quickly. From the coach's standpoint, it's interesting because the most extensive film study and preparation they do in the offseason is on the division opponents.
Right.
So with your Thursday night game being a division opponent, there's already a lot of legwork that's been done there. Also, actually, shortly before we came in to tape the show today, I bumped into an assistant coach downstairs and just asked him, hey, how are things going? He's like, yeah, really busy. I said, well, next week will probably be really busy, right? He's like, well, we're working on it right now. Which is to say that the coaching staff, because they've already devised the game plan for the Cowboys game, the coaching staff is already studying the film and working on the early prep for the game plan for the Bears, so that right away on Monday after the Dallas game, they have a game plan to present to the players to get that process sped up and started for the quick turnaround.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this is certainly where coaches make their money. It's incredible. from a player's standpoint, I can't imagine, you know, trying to go out there and be at your top form in 4 days between two games.
Yeah.
But from a coaching standpoint, just the preparation and hours and sweat equity that get built up trying to get ready for that moment is incredible. And
a lot of tape grinding.
Yeah. The one thing I think that makes it kind of nice is this is the end of the homestand in terms of you had four at home, including the bye, so 5 weeks without travel. So if you're going to be ready for it, this is probably the best you're going to be prepared to handle all this. And we'll also get to see the Color Rush jerseys now, too. That should be another thing that you can add to it, but I know for me personally, as a football fan, these games are always kind of fun to check out, and I've always kind of liked the Thursday night games. I'm not involved with the game planning. I'm not a player.
Yeah.
But in terms of, there's really nothing else on television on Thursday night, so it's like it's cool to have some football. But again, you know, when you look at the Packers trying to take the most of these opportunities, keep that November, or I should say October success going at home.
Right.
This is going to be something that'll stress them a little bit, but also could be really beneficial going in the second half of the season.
Yeah, we'll see a little bit different uniforms in both of these two games in 5 days, which I guess maybe helps the whole laundry situation. You got your throwback uniforms against the Cowboys and then the Color Rush uniforms against the Bears. So they can wait until both games are over and then throw everything in the laundry to get it all cleaned up. But before we go to a break, let's take care of a little bit of sponsor business here, Wes. At home or here in the stands, we all know that Green Bay fans give it their all, and that takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious chunky chicken broccoli cheese. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game, and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, final segment. The Packers will be honoring quarterback Brett Favre Sunday afternoon once again against the Dallas Cowboys. His name will be added to the facade at Lambeau Field amongst all the other Green Bay Packers Hall of Famers. And I just find it interesting that this game was chosen last year when Favre's retired number was added to the facade under the scoreboard. It was against the Chicago Bears, the team that he basically owned throughout his career. And then the Packers went out and lost. So this year, they picked the Dallas Cowboys, the team amongst any other would have to be considered his biggest nemesis throughout his career with those consecutive playoff losses in the 90s and everything. So maybe that's a way to flip the tables here and get the Packers a win at home.
Yeah, and if you think about it too, even last year with Ron Wolf and the Detroit Lions when they came to town as well, that was another, you know, and the success the Packers had against the Lions during Wolf's tenure. But yeah, this is certainly, when you think back to those 90s Packers, the Dallas Cowboys were enemy of the state. I mean, they were number one in terms
yeah,
of
no question.
You know, who I think the Packers were trying to get past and where they needed to get to, it was eventually going to have to go through the Cowboys. And the one thing I think that's really interesting, when I was putting together our game program for it and honoring Favre, the Packers are actually 9-1 at home against Dallas. And certainly they had their issues down in Texas over those years. But
well, they could never get them to come to Lambeau. No. Like, there was that whole stretch of games that were all in Dallas, and the Packers fans kept waiting, when are they going to come to Lambeau Field?
Yeah, it was crazy. And then when they have been here, you know, over the X amount of years, I mean, the Packers have actually had a lot of success. Jason Garrett has never actually beaten the Packers yet. 0-4 now going into this game. So certainly a lot of things going for them in that respect. And as you said, Favre's name being added to the other Pro Football Hall of Famers on the facade of Lambeau Field. Certainly last year, the Thanksgiving game, having his number hoisted in the north end zone was special. But now also having him going up, I would presume – maybe be next to Ron Wolf in Lambeau with the new one.
Yeah.
So that's a nice touch on everything, and certainly anytime you can get Brett Favre back at Lambeau Field, it always makes for a special night.
Yeah, I remember, I know I'm a little older than you. I don't know how old you were during those 90s playoff losses, but those three straight playoff defeats in Dallas, the first two, the divisional round in 93 and 94, you know, really the Cowboys just took it to Green Bay, yeah. and the Packers really weren't in those games. But that 95 NFC Championship, boy, I mean, the Packers fell behind early, then actually had the lead going into the fourth quarter. They had a big third quarter. I believe the Packers were ahead 27-24 going into the fourth quarter, and you thought, whoa, that maybe they can do this. It's right there for the taking, and Emmitt Smith kind of took over there for the Dallas Cowboys, and they got a couple of touchdowns and sent the Packers home to defeat once again. But and then in the 96 playoffs, when the Packers thought, okay, we're the number one seed, we're going to get the Cowboys to come to Lambeau, then the Cowboys got knocked off on the road down in Carolina. And the rematch, Dom Capers, that's right. And then the rematch with the Cowboys didn't happen until the 97 regular season, and then the Packers just ran them off the field.
Yeah, that win that Carolina got over Dallas was sort of the end of the dynasty at that point for them.
Yep.
But it always is interesting. I think one of the reasons why Wolf, I mean, he made a lot of great moves, but the decisions he made after that 95 playoff loss are really what put the Packers over the top, and in my opinion, really solidified himself as a Hall of Fame general manager in really pointing out where they needed to improve and what adjustments they had to make. So from Favre's perspective, I think it's going to be really cool for him to be back at Lambeau and being able to take that in one more time against an opponent that obviously he was so familiar with. But it's going to be really fun. I think it's going to be a good night.
Yeah, and hopefully a little bit better weather than Favre's return last year on Thanksgiving when it was kind of rainy and put a little bit of a damper on things, then not to mention the loss there at the end. But anyway, we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. You can find the team account at Packers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.